Coming to you again from the West Coast here at Jaeger's. We're going to do an update on Politicoast. We were wanting to record when the election was called, but fucking Scott was right. And it's 42-42-3, you asshole.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes to 11 right now, and we still really don't know how this is going to shake out. Granted, I'm absolutely going to take credit for this, but like, it's still pretty
at
uncertain.
At this exact moment, you are correct.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod, Kaelin Harris, in second place. Just saw that on the screen. Have to get him a shout out. So I sent a comment into Business in Vancouver because they emailed me and were like, let's get your thoughts. And they didn't ask you, so I sent my own in. And I just said, honestly, like right now we have the NDP behind just over a point in the popular vote. And it almost just goes to show the sort of strength of the machine they put out this election. They managed to get out exactly who they needed to get out to, you know, pull off this sort of narrow 1996-esque edging win without actually winning the popular vote, which once again sort of kind of goes to show how shitty First Past the Post is.
Amen!
Yeah.
And yeah, everyone here agrees.
Yeah, we don't seem to have any disagreement here. Real question is, will the NDPHQ be disagreeing on that? Because, you know, if they manage to eke out that one extra seat or something without changing the popular vote too much, you know, are they really going to have that incentive to fulfill their electoral reform promise? I mean, we've already seen what's happened federally on that.
The big challenge is going to end up being if two seats swing and it becomes a majority. Right now, the Greens hold an absurd amount of power, which was in a very small chance, and Andrew Weaver and his two new friends, Adam and Sonia, are now going to get to decide who's king or queen of BC.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be what's really going to be interesting to watch, is if they can hold on to this slim minority. And admittedly, it was kind of what I was hoping for, not just because it's going to be a lot of good fodder for the podcast, but because, you know, I wasn't exactly sold on either of the big two parties, so having kind of someone to hold their feet to the fire is good.
I was thinking with a majority government either way, we'd have to spend a lot more time talking about federal politics or international politics or eventually local politics, and that's just absurdly partisan and vitriolic and very niche. But it looks like for a while we'll get to sort of delve into machinations at the provincial level.
Yeah, definitely. And we're, what, 18 months from the next municipal election? So that'll only hold off for so long. But yeah, this is shaping up to be pretty interesting next couple months provincially.
All right, so the Greens are pulling around 16% of the vote right now. Their polls were saying 17 plus. I sort of was basing my predictions on their vote kind of collapsing, and I kind of want to say I was right based on them not getting that. Do you sort of find that, or do you think this is just within a margin of error?
Well, mathematically, it is absolutely within the margin of error, but it is kind of a little lower than people were expecting, and the big question was going to be how efficient their vote was going to be, and I think they did fairly well, and they probably made the right calls on where to dedicate their kind of riding level resources to.
I mean, historically in BC, third parties get shit on by First Past the Post. You just cannot, you know, present a relative decent number of MLAs with 16, even 20 or 30% of the vote. You need to be in the top two. But otherwise, it's so tight that we wish we could make a final call and predict where it's going to go from here, but right now we're still waiting for final polls to come in for advance votes and all these other things that are going to swing a couple key ridings. Any other comments, or else we can throw it over to this crowd that actually showed up. Thank you all.
Yeah. Seriously, thank you.
And to be clear to future listeners, it's not like two people here. There's over 10 people in this room.
There are literally dozens of us.
Well, let's say dozen singular, but fine. Definitely more than 10. Final thoughts, or we'll throw it over to questions?
I guess the only final thought is if this holds up is, you know, I guess we'll probably be watching out for electoral reform at the provincial level pretty soon.
All right. Questions from the crowd. Brian.
Being as specific as you can, why do you think it is that Kamloops, Prince George, Kelowna, and all these places have chosen to screw over the rest of the province by overwhelmingly voting Liberal when clearly the Liberal Party is corrupt, there's investigations, they're in bed with the realtors? I mean, how obtuse does one have to be to think they're a viable choice?
I mean, the bigger question beyond just, like, why have people in the interior got stuck with the Liberals is just, why is anyone, in my view, stuck with the Liberals? And there's that, there's this, like, absurdly partisan nature of BC on the one hand, and people are, a big chunk of this province is just anti-NDP to the core. And that's what I think fueled some of the green growth. But we've also, I think tonight, I was talking with Devin and Patrick and a couple others, the NDP hacks in the room, no offense. Patrick's wearing it. And there's this clear divide now, especially when you look at the map, between rural and urban BC. Just like you're seeing rural and urban Canada, rural and urban states, rural and urban is becoming a very different sort of political climate. And the Liberals are running up the scoreboard in rural BC, and the NDP is starting to run up the scoreboard or compete strong enough in urban BC. And it becomes a very tough situation. And it just becomes partisan and entrenched, and I don't know how you break through that, but that's sort of where we're at.
Yeah, and it looks like we're going to be moving to kind of the federal situation where the key ridings are going to be the suburban ones. And yeah, the interior is just one of those areas that the Liberal message resonates with more, and the NDP just hasn't been able to manage to break through, even in the larger urban areas in the interior.
I'm not even convinced it's a message breaking through. It's just the sort of, like, partisan family affiliation. Like, I grew up in rural Alberta, where my parents are pretty liberal-minded, but it was just sort of like the default that, oh, well, conservatives are who we vote for, and they're, like, nice people, and they have our best interests at heart, but they didn't really look that deep. And I think that sort of entrenchment is taking place, and that's where I feel it's going. Follow-up?
Yeah, just, I don't mind if you cut this, right? So, in Ireland...
By the way, I'm not going to cut any of this, because I'm way too, like, drunk and lazy to deal with it, and this is even going in it.
So, in Ireland, I mean, when you talk about a rural-urban divide, I just want to go, yeah, that's normal internationally, this is not a new thing, but there's still reasons for it. So, like, in Ireland, for example, the Fine Gael party has typically supported farmers, and they've supported grants for farmers and subsidies and all that kind of stuff, whereas Fianna Fáil has been more focused on helping out urban areas. I mean, the policies they have enacted have helped those groups and those who voted for them, but the Liberals are clearly screwing over everybody, so help.
I think what it comes down to, like, historically, the NDP and CCF before them came out of farmers and rural and loggers and the sort of resource-based movements. But as Canada sort of progressed in its economy, the NDP has become more of an urban party. It sort of represents the young professionals, the sort of millennials, and so forth, and especially minority communities, whereas the Conservatives and Liberals, BC Liberals, have sort of tried to present that we're the party that will keep the jobs in the rural economy going. They'll build pipelines, for example. That's a big thing that tries to convince the interior. Like, what else are you going to work for except to build a pipeline that will keep your job for 2 to 5 years? Except realizing that once a pipeline is built, there's not that many jobs to keep it up. But the idea of keeping money and investment and resources is something the Liberals and the federal Conservatives have really played off of. And then it becomes a sort of play off that into some of the nationalistic and white identity almost politics. well, which is what they identify with, because those are very white areas.
There's also the fact that the NDP basically didn't campaign outside the Lower Mainland and the island.
Well, and it paid off tonight. Or at least paid off enough.
But yeah, like they spent most their time in Vancouver and the island, and in the last week or so, they've been fighting pretty hard to try and kind of stem the Greens on the island, which has basically left the North and the interior up to the Liberals to campaign on it. You know, Christy Clark spent a lot of time in the rest of the province, which the NDP ignored to a much greater extent.
Eli?
Sure. So, assuming this 42-42 seat split continues, when I wake up tomorrow morning, what's going to happen?
I'll take it.
My guess is we won't have a good answer for that tomorrow and the next couple days, weeks or so, where we'll still be getting the trickled in of the absentee ballots, the mail-ins and everything. There'll be a lot of kind of backroom talk between Andrew Weaver and the two other leaders trying to hash out who has the best offer for them. But I'd give an 85% chance that Weaver's going to end up back in the Green or back in the NDP in this.
You mean back with the NDP? Procedurally, what happens?
Backing.
Procedurally, what happens is the party that was government gets first kick at the can at going to the lieutenant governor and forming a new government. So I don't think we're going to see Christy Clark, John Horgan, or Andrew Weaver quit tonight, because that gives up all the power they have in what's a total toss-up. So Christy Clark theoretically has the ability to go to the lieutenant governor, who none of us remembers who is right now. No offense to him or her.
Her.
Her?
Her.
Do you remember her name?
No, that's okay. All I know is her. I literally know one thing.
So Christy Clark gets first dibs to go. But if she can't sort of make the case any more than John Horgan could, like if John Horgan came forward with a sort of coalition agreement with Andrew Weaver saying, here's our promise that we'll be a strong government, well, a 45-seat government for, which is a pretty narrow majority government, for 4 years, they could command the majority of the House, majority of legislature, and that puts them in government. However, everything I've sort of seen from Andrew Weaver and the sort of politicking he's done and the animosity between the two parties, I sort of see him wanting to take the vote-by-vote sort of approach, having a minority parliament, which I know Brian here hates the term, but the which has become a Canadian term, meaning no party has a majority. So he will vote with whoever's sort of in government on a issue by issue. When it's tied like this, we've never seen this happen. And as far as I know, we've never seen this happen in a Westminster system, which I'm saying includes UK, Australia, everywhere else. So poli-sci majors are going to like love this for months. We as podcasters, talkings, sort of primarily about BC politics are going to love this as well for months. What's going to happen? Who knows? But it's going to come down to, like Scott says, backroom deals. I think Andrew Weaver, like he said before the results came in, before the voting, he wants to focus on campaign finance reform. He wants to focus on electoral reform, which his two top line issues are not green issues, essentially. They're not, you know, pipelines. They're not the environment. They're not carbon tax. Even if they were, all of those issues do line up more with the NDP than the Liberals, but it's going to come down to how hard Christy Clark wants to remain premier. Is she willing to overhaul campaign finance reform? Is she willing to put electoral reform to a referendum like the UK Conservatives did to get the Liberal Democrats on board in 2011, which ended up terrible for the Liberal Democrats, as they'll remember, because they sold out all the other promises they were elected on. Andrew Weaver's got a lot of thinking to do. At least he has two friends now to do it with.
But at the same time, you have the Green Party base being more anti-liberal than anti-NDP, although the vitriol of the campaign probably hasn't helped that at all. But they're overall more likely to want to see Christy Clark go than anything else. And, you know, if John Horton can't actually present the case for the NDP to back him and can't offer them a good deal, like, John Horton shouldn't be in politics. It's basically that simple, where, like, the NDP should be able to pull this one off without a problem. And if it becomes challenging, they failed.
Another question? Devin.
So, I'm going to ask you to speculate, Michael, here, because it's fun. So, okay, so in you know, a few weeks' time, this holds, hypothetically, the BC Liberals form government. What, you know, how long do you think they would last before the, for example, you know, their budget fails to pass and another election is called? Because I'm thinking that, you know, this government is not stable. You know, like, this kind of format, it's kind of unique, as you said. Do you think that the chances of another election happening soon are increased? I guess they're obviously increased, but are they increased significantly even? Or do you think this might last?
This teeter-totter is not going to last 4 years. I think that's a pretty safe thing I'll put my money on. But if the leadership goes to the Liberals and they manage to pull off an agreement with the BC Greens, I think it's going to come down to what agreement they shake out. If they manage to shake out a full coalition where they say, we're going to hold on together for 4 years, and it realistically is only 2 years or less, they can do more than 4 months. I bet if they can form out a formal coalition agreement, I think they can do more than a year. I'm not sure that Weaver is willing to do that, but he also is probably thinking this is the best he's probably going to be able to do in a while unless he gets electoral reform, because third parties don't tend to do well a second time.
Especially if they're the junior partner coalition in a first-past-the-post system. They tend to wear all the shit from the main headliner party of it and get very few of their goals accomplished. Okay, so it's just changed to 43 Liberal, 41 NDP, 3 Green. Still a minority parliament, but less of a tie.
One last question. I'm sure not all of your listeners are people who've been living in BC all their life and know everything.
Neither of us have lived in BC all our life.
Right. I'm here 10 years and I'm still catching up. And you just said something earlier on that kind of caught me by surprise. So there's a governor of BC in addition to a governor general of Canada that the parties have to ask permission to form the government?
Yes. So, like we have the governor general, at the provincial level, there's a lieutenant governor, which basically fills the same role.
So it's not a democracy?
There's a lieutenant governor in every province. So
yeah, so every province gets its own vice regent, and they fulfill the same role, and you know, the parties basically have to go to them. They're the ones who formally signed the writ to dissolve parliament, or dissolve the legislature, call an election. They're the ones that sign every bill. It's for practical purposes.
Canada's constitutional monarchy, just like the UK, except so we have the Queen of England, who's also the Queen of Canada, but her representative in Canada is the Governor General at the federal level, and the Lieutenant Governor is at the provincial levels.
For practical purposes.
But they're all appointed by the premiers or the...
I knew at the federal level, but I didn't realize we also have this micromanagement at the provincial level.
Luckily, we don't have whatever sub-level...
We don't have them at the city level, too.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. We do not have municipal governors.
What would even be below a lieutenant governor at that point?
I don't know. You're the military guy.
Like a sergeant general?
We don't know what seat flipped, but it's now 43, 41, and 3. Any final thoughts, questions? Anyone want to jump in and give their own analysis? Sadly, this election will not result in a republic coming in. and the Republican movement is not that strong in Canada. But one day we can hope.
There was a Republican candidate running in this election. One. He does not appear to have won.
Well, and our friends at the BC Conservatives don't seem to have measured on the board, as far as we can tell. Yeah, I haven't looked up the raw results yet, but...
Well, they're still coming in, but same thing with the your political party and the Libertarians.
We saw some of them on the early voting, but when you only have one poll resulting... when you only have one poll reporting, you can have literally anyone in the lead.
And that initial communist surge that one poll indicated in...
Kamloops
doesn't seem to have materialized either.
Sadly, the revolution's not yet active in Kamloops. Give it 4 more years. Well, with that, let's call it a night for the show. We'll hopefully know the results in the morning. I might actually have to edit this because I'm starting to stutter from all the beers, but such is the night. Thank you all for coming. This is Politicoast. Find us on the internet.
Thank you.